You've heard our open themes with listeners talking about their vocations.
Missouri dairy farmers, love issues, etc.
And what they're doing while listening to Issues Etc.
This is Mark from Michigan, and I am a lawnmower listener. We love Issues Etc.
We're looking for more of these elements to include in our open themes. Tell us about your vocation, hobby, or what you do while listening to Issues Etc. Call the Issues Etc. comment line 24/7 at 618-223-8382. If you make a mistake, just start over. 618-223-8382. Thanks for listening, and thanks for contributing to Issues Etc. 618-223-8382.
Hillary Clinton wants to blame everyone else for her mounting legal troubles, but she has brought this situation onto herself. She's got nobody to blame but herself.
By all means, they should look at them. And I am sure they will reach the same conclusion they did when they looked at my emails for the last year. There is no case here.
Presidential candidates Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton talking about the FBI's decision to look at new emails. And the decision was announced in a letter to a congressional committee at what people, well, some people say was just the right time. Some people say was a time that seems highly suspicious. It's brought the FBI director. Those who thought he was the greatest American alive a week ago now think he's out to sink the election. It's hard to tell what's going on. And in the meantime, as is typical in all presidential elections, or so it seems to me, everyone is telling us that the race is getting tighter and tighter and tighter. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. On this Tuesday, November the 1st, 1 week out from the November elections, we will review them one more time. Mark Hemingway joins us. He's senior writer for the Weekly Standard. Mark, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Great to be back.
And Molly Hemingway, senior editor for The Federalist. Molly, welcome back to you as well.
Great to be here.
All right, this is for both of you. I need you to alleviate my cynicism, because it seems to me that while it does appear, according to the polls, that the race is tightening up in places, it's in the best interest of all three parties involved here, both candidates and the media, to assure a tight race at the end. What would you have to say about that, Mark, first?
Well, it's a divided country, and it's a closely divided one, so it's not surprising that toward the end of the election that the polls are, in fact, narrowing. Certainly, you know, members of the Representative Party that have been unhappy with both of the unpopular candidates are kind of coming home at this time. So, yeah, you would naturally expect to see the race tightening in a lot of ways, but it is also true that the media has a big incentive to pretend that this is, you know, a tight horse race. You know, they find it more exciting, and they sell more newspapers that way. But at the end of the day, there's still a lot of factors here you have to consider. One is that, again, we don't, you know, look at national polls. I know we've said this before in the show, but you have to look at the election state by state and how that affects the Electoral College. And then when you look at things that way and you start looking at state polls, it certainly looks like Hillary Clinton is sitting on a, you know, not big, but, you know, reasonably comfortable lead in a lot of ways in the Electoral College. And on top of that, even in the national polls, you know, even if Trump has a slight margin or Hillary Clinton has a slight margin, the reality is that Hillary Clinton has an actual campaign organization with an actual get-out-the-vote operation, whereas Trump has flown completely by the seat of his pants, and he would not be able to pad any sort of lead he had, or he might even see a small lead evaporate by a big Democratic turnout machine.
Molly, what are your thoughts on the very common tight race scenario?
Well, first off, I would just like to mention that I think that the media are way too reliant on polling prior to Election Day. You know, it's kind of cheesy to say it, but the only poll that does matter is what happens on Election Day. And just the sheer number of polls that we are subjected to and how many times that drives the conversation, I'm not entirely sure that's healthy. And so I wish that people would just calm down a little bit about polls. It's absolutely true that the media are interested in money, and that has been a good way to understand what they have done throughout the primary in lifting Donald Trump up. I mean, Donald Trump was excellent for media organizations during the primary, and he's continued to be excellent for them, even though they had to change their posture toward him to sort of maintain the frenzy. And that drives a lot of what's happening with our coverage. I think we should always be skeptical of what's in it for the media. And then, yes, of course, both campaigns need to drive excitement and concern. Hillary wants to scare her voters into voting, because when you're ahead, you worry that they're going to sit back and not take it seriously. And then Donald Trump wants to give people a reason to believe that it's still winnable. And, you know, they're all right. Everybody's right. It is still winnable for Donald Trump. It's a very long shot chance, but it's certainly winnable. And Hillary Clinton does have problems with voter apathy, particularly with communities that Barack Obama had no trouble with, you know, for instance, like black communities, or they're not early voting as much in Florida and whatnot. So this is how campaigns make sure that their people do try and come out and vote.
I just want to add a few things to what Molly said. And one is that what she said about, you know, polling in general. I have a good friend. He's a former White House speechwriter named Matt Robinson that wrote a book years ago called Mobocracy, where he looks at the actual, you know, science and everything behind public opinion polls and tries to actually look at whether or not this is actually good for society. And I think if you look at how the polls reflect voter ignorance on complex issues, and it's been specifically in recent years, polls have required sort of a high status because they've turned out to be pretty accurate in the last couple of presidential elections, but certainly in off years and other elections, the polls have been wildly, wildly wrong. We certainly saw that with Brexit earlier this year. So again, I would not put a faith in polling. And also remember, I think they do have kind of a destructive force. They're kind of a destructive force in politics. You know, the saying goes, you can't manage what you can't measure. And polls are everybody's attempt to try and manage politics. And at the end of the day, the only people that should be managing politics is the voters, and using polls as a way to sort of, you know, tug at voters' interests and sympathies and fears has really been kind of a destructive force, and we do get way too obsessed over polls, and especially in presidential election years.
Okay, Molly, going with your principle that it's not yours, but the oft-repeated principle that the only poll that matters is on election day, there is early voting, and that early voting in some places, I looked at the aggregate this morning, had Hillary Clinton at 49% and Donald Trump at 43%, according to the early votes that have already been cast. How much should that be viewed as a prediction?
Okay, first off, that's not according to early votes that have been cast, because they don't release those until actual voting day. That's, I guess you'd almost call it exit polling for votes that have already been cast. Exit polls tend to be far less reliable than other polls, so just take those with an additional grain of salt. But early voting is something that has reached something of an epidemic in this country, and I feel like a crank about this, but you know, the Constitution does say we're all supposed to vote on one day, and I think people have stretched that one day out into months, and I'm not sure it's really good for civic life. And certain states allow voting from, you know, weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks on end prior to the actual election day. There are mail-in ballots in certain states. There are problems with electoral security about this, but I also am just not sure it's good for that principle that we all come together as neighbors and vote, and that we can keep an eye on how it's going in our neighborhoods. This is big, and it's gotten bigger every year, and it's a huge thing for certain campaigns that like to take advantage of it. And, you know, you miss out things. That news about Hillary Clinton, about a new or a reopening of the investigation into her mishandling of classified information, that only hit on Friday. If you voted 4 weeks ago and now you think, oh, wait, maybe I don't want to put a crook in, you can't really do anything about it.
Well, let's talk about it. The news today has turned to Hillary Clinton's right-hand woman, Huma Abedin, and the emails of hers that appeared on her estranged husband's computer and were found in an unrelated investigation by the FBI that led to James Comey's letter to the Congressional Committee. Mark, you say it is a scandal. Of course,
yeah.
The Clinton campaign is saying it's nothing. it's not going to be anything more than it was before.
Well, you played that clip right before the segment began where Hillary Clinton says there's no case here, you know, and the crowd cheers. I mean, this is positively Nixonian. I mean, it sounds just like I am not a crook or, you know, to use an earlier Clintonian phrase, no controlling legal authority. I mean, this is not the rallying cry of someone who is being, you know, persecuted unfairly. She's not saying this is a witch hunt. She's not saying I'm innocent. She's not saying anything of the sort. She's saying there's no case here. And I really think that, you know, that should be a big sign to people that this is a woman who knows on some level that she's done something wrong. Now, she's said that it was a mistake to use the server. She hasn't gone so far as to admit that it was probably illegal. In fact, almost certainly illegal when you consider. In fact, I just wrote about a man named Kristen Saucier, who's a naval engineer who took 6 cell phone pictures of the interior of a nuclear submarine and was sentenced to a year in prison for it. Now, interior photos of a nuclear submarine are considered confidential information, the lowest level of classification. Hillary Clinton had top secret information on her email server, and it was almost certainly hacked by Russian servers. So the idea that Hillary Clinton would skate, and yet, you know, an ordinary member of the military who, you know, took some pictures on a cell phone is in prison, I think rightly infuriates a lot of Americans, and it should be treated as a scandal. But the reality is we have this big media complex that is, you know, very liberal, and we have, you know, certainly all manner of people in influential institutions that are heavily invested in Democratic and liberal politics out there trying to completely muddy the waters and make what is a very obvious discrepancy in how the rule of law is applied into something that isn't a problem, and that, you know, Hillary Clinton can just, you know, cakewalk into the White House because of it.
Molly, I was kind of just whiplashed, at least verbally, watching Friday as the news about Comey's letter to the Congressional Committee broke, the reaction of the media, especially on this via social media. Talk about how, as you say, Clinton fans responded to the latest investigation.
Oh, it was just so interesting. This news, it came out so subtly. James Comey, the FBI director, simply sends a letter to Congress notifying them that his previous testimony regarding the closing of the investigation against Hillary Clinton is no longer valid, and so he just wants to update them. They found more. They need investigative tools to truly get at all of the classified information, and that's because we know that they found it in the Anthony Weiner investigation, which I believe is some type of child endangerment investigation. And so they need new investigative tools to investigate and reopen this investigation. And the first thing I thought that was really interesting was that the Clinton camp, instead of truly downplaying the information and saying, no big deal, we're not worried, it's going to be fine, let's just keep talking about other stuff, they lost it. They decided to go to war against Comey, a man they had all previously praised as wonderful. But the other thing I thought was interesting was the journalistic response. Now, journalists normally love scandal. I mean, there is no scandal too small for them to obsess over when it comes to Donald Trump, or for that matter, any other person who's running as a Republican. In this case, there was a lot of pressure to literally just not report the news, and everyone got very obsessed about process all of a sudden. They really wondering if James Comey had followed the right process, and they spent hours litigating whether reopening an investigation means that the investigation has been reopened. They were trying to argue. In fact, there was this one Atlantic writer, Mark Amender, who said, if you say that this reopened investigation into Hillary is a reopening of an investigation, you are a liar. I mean, he just got very emotional. Like, what would you call it exactly? Now I think people have moved on.
It's literally the Federal Bureau of Investigation. I mean, it's what they do. It's in the job title. And the fact they got hung up over in that semantic point of whether it was an investigation was so telling.
So, Mark, what do you make of the what has kind of settled into the Clinton response to this, which is, hey, show us what you have. Show everyone what you have. We need to know what you have in all those emails that, by the way, we probably have, too, because they were our emails. What do you make of that?
Well, they just want to know what they have to react to, I think. You know, I mean, you would think it's, they would have at least made a cursory attempt to sort of catalog what they were deleting and what they would, you know, should be able to anticipate what's going out there. But I think they want a very clear idea of what the FBI might be considering a problem so that they can sort of pre-plan their political response.
I think it's actually much different than that. I think they're demanding their release. We know they've done nothing to actually care about transparency this entire time. The FBI can't release while they're doing an investigation, so they're demanding something that they know the FBI can't consent to.
Right, but I think that there's a couple of different things here at work. One is that I don't know what this says. I mean, I realize the election is close, but I mean, if I were Hillary's campaign, I would be, you know, at least, you know, more comfortable about my prospects for winning here than certainly Donald Trump's campaign. And the fact they're freaking out over this really says a couple of things that I think are bigger issues that go beyond the presidential election. One is that this, having Hillary Clinton at the top of the ticket, is going to hurt when this scandal breaking late is going to hurt Democrats down ticket, and the balance of power in the Senate is very precarious right now. So a major scandal for Hillary Clinton at the last minute could, you know, help Kelly Ayotte in New Hampshire and some of these other Republicans that are in very tight Senate races right now, and it could possibly help Republicans keep control of the Senate. So having Republicans with control of not one but two chambers in Congress would, you know, make Hillary Clinton's presidency very difficult, especially considering she's going to walk into office under a cloud of scandal, be, you know, even more unpopular than Barack Obama was at times in his presidency. So that's a big issue right there. And then secondarily, they're just, you know, they're worried in general about, you know, buyer's remorse among the Democratic Party. I mean, they want a mandate among the rank and file Democrats to, you know, endorse whatever Hillary Clinton does. And they're, you know, very concerned that this scandal is just going to double down on the fact that people put her in office simply because she wasn't Trump. They'll make it very hard for Hillary Clinton to do anything and get reelected.
Mark Hemingway, senior writer for the Weekly Standard, along with Molly Hemingway, senior editor for The Federalist. We are putting in our last review of the November elections 1 week before the elections are held. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about, they call it OPPO, but it's opposition data dumps. Kind of a WikiLeaks style thing to do. You just throw everything you have out at the media, and one has come from the Clinton camp against Trump. We'll talk with Molly about that after this. Concordia Publishing House's annual warehouse sale is both online and in store. Take advantage of discounted prices on many of the items you hear promoted on Issues Etc. November the 1st through the 8th. You'll find major cost savings on books, music, Bibles, educational resources, and more. Concordia Publishing House's fall warehouse sale at cph.org and at 3558 South Jefferson in St. Louis. Concordia Publishing House's warehouse sale, November the 1st through the 8th.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Trinity Lutheran, Bridgeton, Missouri. Calvary Lutheran, Elgin, Illinois. Advent Lutheran, Zionsville, Indiana. Redeemer Lutheran, Fort Worth, Texas. Holy Cross Lutheran, Albany, Oregon. St. John's Lutheran, Evanston, Indiana. Mount Calvary Lutheran, San Antonio, Texas. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Boise, Idaho. Village Lutheran, Ladue, Missouri. Emmanuel Lutheran, Osceola, Iowa. St. Paul Lutheran, Clarinda, Iowa. Trinity Lutheran, Lebanon, Missouri. Mount Calvary Lutheran, Excelsior Springs, Missouri. The Lutheran Church of Our Savior, Cupertino, California. Christ Our Savior Lutheran, Freeburg, Illinois, and Peace Lutheran, Neenah, Wisconsin. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget at our website, issuesetc.org. Click support. The Issues Etc. 300.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're getting a weekly update on the November elections. Mark Hemingway of the Weekly Standard and Molly Hemingway of the Federalist are our guests. Molly, what is an opposition research dump? And you've written recently about a failed example thereof.
Yes. Every campaign that's worth its salt has researchers who dig into their own candidate and the other candidates that they're running against so that they can release information against, they can be prepared for whatever is going to come for their own candidate. They can release the bad information about the other candidate at the most opportune time. These are sometimes referred to as October surprises because they're things that people hold on to until October so as to maximize the impact of the bad information and keep the opposing campaign from having a really good chance at responding to it. The Clinton campaign has been wonderful at opposition research dumps. Their best example of it was when they had a coordinated string of attacks, all taking old news about Donald Trump and repackaging it as new and nefarious regarding his treatment of women. People already knew that Donald Trump was bad with women, and they'd built that into their support with him. But in this case, it all kind of came out at once. Big news, local news, print publications, broadcast publications, and it all came out one night a few weeks ago, and I think we remember that that was a very important and effective dump of information. Now, what happened after the news about Hillary Clinton's investigation being the investigation into Hillary Clinton being reopened, they rushed out another opposition dump where they had a series of friendly reporters at various outlets all come up with stories about Donald Trump and Russia. Now, rumors about Donald Trump's involvement with Russia have been swirling around for many months, so everyone was kind of expecting a big, good opposition dump on this. But what happened is it was a total and utter unbelievable flop. The day started with Harry Reid, the Senate Minority Leader, writing a letter saying that Comey was ignoring Russia problems and that he was violating the Hatch Act by doing his job. So that kind of set the narrative. Well, then, within a few hours, maybe even within an hour, on last night, a bunch of stories dropped. One was that Donald Trump had a secret server privately set up to deal with a Russian bank. And Hillary Clinton tweeted out that there was this secret server privately set up and that it was, when a reporter asked about it, they shut it down. And then a week later, they reset up this private server to secretly communicate with the bank in Russia. It turned out it was like their email server was not secret. It was something that they bought from another company that does mail servers. So it wasn't private or secret, and it wasn't set up to communicate with a bank in Russia. And it hadn't been shut down after a reporter inquiry, and it hadn't been reset up for the same nefarious purpose. I mean, the story just so completely fell apart that the New York Times debunked it within a couple hours. There were all these other stories anonymously sourced with very vague sourcing about the FBI is starting a preliminary investigation of someone who used to work with Donald Trump about his ties to Russia. This is a guy who I would have assumed they were already doing a criminal investigation of, but this anonymous source, they said they might be doing a preliminary investigation. Another anonymous source said that James Comey had refused to allow the FBI's name to be used on an Obama document claiming that Russia was meddling in the election. And this anonymous source said it was because it was too close to the election. So the idea was he's a hypocrite for not putting his name on this document when he's willing to announce that the investigation is going on into Hillary Clinton. But, you know, it was ridiculously bad sourcing, and it didn't even really make sense. And then Mother Jones, which is a famous Red publication, and I mean R-E-D, Red, on that front, saying that Russia had been cultivating Donald Trump and was using him or something. Now, that it was not even a very specific thing to say, so it should have been easy to substantiate. But even that story had one anonymous, supposedly former spy source, and there was no way to corroborate it, and there was not really any attempt to try to corroborate it. So everything came out at once. Everyone saw that it was coordinated, and everyone saw it all kind of sputter at the same time. It was just an interesting failure for a campaign that had normally done such better work.
Mark, finally for you, and with only about a minute here, you've written recently about some rumors that Hillary Clinton would like to have Joe Biden as Secretary of State.
Yeah. Well, right now the bench of popular nationally known Democrats is not very deep, and you need one of those in such an important position as Secretary of State. Not only that, you're going to have a situation here where Hillary Clinton's going to have a whole lot of foreign policy messes that Obama is handing over to her, which is why it's so baffling that she would want to settle in on Joe Biden. I mean, I get politically why you want somebody as popular as Biden to be in that position, but his actual practical experience in foreign policy in the Obama administration was disastrous. And recall that Joe Biden bet his vice presidency on whether or not we would secure a status of forces agreement to keep a sizable troop presence in Iraq. He failed to do that. Even though fact checkers got hung up on how literal Donald Trump was when he said that Obama and Hillary created ISIS, the truth is that the lack of a U.S. troop presence in Iraq allowed ISIS to grow and flourish, and almost no one disputes that. And that is all completely on Joe Biden. Not completely on Joe Biden, but largely on Joe Biden. So it's just, baffling to me that she would settle in on somebody who was the architect of one of the Obama administration's biggest foreign policy failures as her Secretary of State.
You will find a link to Mark Ann Molling Hemingway's columns under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Mark Hemingway is senior writer for the Weekly Standard. Mark, thank you.
Thank you.
Molly Hemingway is senior editor for The Federalist. Molly, thank you as well.
Thank you.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll continue our series, Classroom Apologetics. We're going this time into the Sociology 101 classroom with sociologist Dr. Alvin Schmidt. We're going to be talking about how sociology has been heavily influenced by a kind of thinking that has society being not the product of man's activity, but man being the product of society's activity, the influence of Karl Marx and his ideas in sociology, and much more tomorrow when we continue our series, Classroom Apologetics, Sociology 101, with Dr. Alvin Schmidt. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Hello, this is Pastor Kevin Golden of Village Lutheran Church in Ladue, Missouri. The saints at Village Lutheran are proud to be part of the Issues Etc. 300, sharing in their Christ-centered, cross-focused proclamation of the gospel. If you find yourself in St. Louis, join us on Sundays at 8:15 and 10:45 for the Divine Service, 9:30 for Bible study and Sunday school, as we receive Christ's gifts of forgiveness, life, and salvation. Or visit us on the web at www.villagelutheranchurch.org.
Are you tired of working nights, weekends, and odd hours trying to cover your bases at home just to make ends meet? At the Cleaning Authority, we call that the multi-job shuffle, and we want to end that for you right now. We'll train you in our proven, efficient cleaning methods, and you'll be partnered to work in pre-qualified homes. Call 314-416-8117 and walk away from the multi-job shuffle with a future in our St. Louis office, 314-416-8117.